I mean, like, a lot of them fall under Jeff Kaczynski's plate as well. So these are all really like harm reduction methods for working with homeless people with substance use disorders. Really, you know.
And I mean, that is a thing in the city.
So then when you're looking at these two things, you can package those. I mean, certainly discuss further those four, but those will be easy to actually bring to the council and say, do you recommend that we support these things?
Right.
And that could lead to delegate representative to meet with a particular task force or board member or whatever.
But just to be clear, though,
when we look at HIV under those, it's heavily impacted, whether it's adherence.
Absolutely.
You know, same with, like, you know, we can throw syphilis and hep C in there too. You know, it's like,
if you were doing some of these,
you know, overdoses would be less, you know, HIV adherence would be improved, PrEP access would be better.
I mean, it just makes sense
in this kind of integrated approach.
Hep C and overdose, for sure, I feel like they fit really well. So, as far as the, sorry.
Oh, no, I still do feel like those throwing sanction encampments in there is like a big one. So I don't know if that's that's like where.
Can I ask a question? Because it was interesting to me as a conversation moving. I'm blocking on your employee's name.
Jason. Yeah.
Because it seems like he was like, that was kind of last week's news that they're just not doing it. And the last age stock I heard of as a mobilization didn't yield very many. Is that what you've most recently heard, or anyone else?
I'm not in this conversation.
So, but I mean, are we late then to make a recommendation, a policy recommendation on the age stocks and the street encampments? Is that already historic, or is there still stuff going on?
I mean, there's conversations going on around the way that they're policing homelessness. Yeah, a couple of supervisors have said that's not appropriate.
Okay.
But
so it's not the encampments, the police involved.
Well, we don't really have encampments anymore because
that's what I'm saying.
They kind of smashed them before they become an encampment.
And you know, like last week, HSOC basically took went down to Civic Center, grabbed a bunch of homeless people, told them you want services, put them in handcuffs, put them in a paddy wagon, drove them to Cask, set them in Cask, and asked them if they want services, and left. And so a lot of them were signed up by the Lives Lead program, but they're not, it's not the way it's meant to work. You know, it's meant to be a warm hand, if not a paddy wagon handcuffed and dropped off at the fucking immigration center still.
So HSOC has a lot of room for improvement, but
it's like, I've met with HSOC and told them my concerns, you know, like as a compassionate care organization that, you know, coerce the people in treatment, you know, saying,
I'll either run your warrants
or you can go, the treatment is still coercive.
Being cuffed and put in a wagon.
And that's when you said yes to treatment. I mean, well, you know.
So
how responsive were they to your points?
They were listening.
I can answer that.
Just for fun.
They were listening, but
I really feel like, you know, there is, I can't prove it, but I feel like the mayor is driving it. They've even said, well, take it up with the mayor, you know, when you think to clients have said that. Cops have just said, yeah, we'll talk to the mayor because we've been told to sweep, you know, and be like.
Who else was there besides sheriff's department?
I just met the HSO. So it was like Commander Lazar and then like all his chiefs.
So it was all the sheriff.
Yeah,
the police.
But yeah, I mean, HSO is. I don't think they want to go away anytime soon, but I think what we can. Continue have the conversation about a different way of introducing the concept of treatment and you know, other services.
I feel like that is a savvier way of putting it at something, right? Yeah.
So I mean, the cost of HSOC is for like what is really photo ops, you know. I mean,
we've had a, so when you look at our law enforcement assisted diversion,
you know, we were getting like, you know, 25 referrals from law enforcement, low level drug offenders, and then we would get, they'd become one big like case role, and then we would
work with them. When they started HSOC, they'd now just basically grab people and drag them in. And so now we went up to 60 referrals that 60, nobody wants to be there. They're just, it's the lesser evil is to ride along with the cop, get dropped off. And so then they're put on our agenda. I mean, on our caseload, but they're phantoms. We don't even, they're not even there when we come. So when we go to the cask, they're not even there.
It's like, but it looks good. It says, oh, look, 60 people were referred to the service, but they're phantoms.
Yeah, they're phantoms referrals, so.
That's my problem, is like there's a lot of stuff going on that's really just optics based and it's not got any real impact in the community, you know? And like,
it could lead to something. I mean, if you want to even think back as far as Care Not Cash and what it eventually led to, I mean, that started off as a very aggressive and in many ways certainly not community-centered and very toxic initiative, and it led to these day-long things that actually turned out to be really helpful. And that started off as in some ways like a photo op for the then mayor.
Right.
So who knows? Maybe in time, Hate Sock, what a name, will be something good. Can dream.
Thank you for that.
A boy can dream.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean,
Mike's not here, but I seem to remember that it was specifically, this was very much related to clients' experience, you know, people losing their medications and these kind of disruptions and, you know, things like that that were going on, like people's having their belongings confiscated. It was very aggressive, you know, basically criminalizing poverty. Certainly looking like some violations were occurring in terms of human rights, etc.
That's what I was asking, because I think we were going to craft a recommendation specifically around that. But it sounds like it's a new approach now, so we need a different recommendation if we're going to do one, right?
I mean, I think we want to draw attention to it and maybe suggest alternatives.
I mean, the one that works
is when they work with CBOs, but not side by side. You know, so like, they say this is an area, this problem area, and instead of them swooping in their stormtrooper outfits on, like, we go up there and say, hey, you know what, the stormtroopers are coming.
Right.
If you leave here now, we're all going to be good. And like, then they don't, but then they miss their dog and pony show for the cameras. We just did not sign on a community letter about they wanted to increase policing in Tenderloin, and all these CBOs in the Tenderloin were like, yeah, there's too much drug dealing, but we were like, no, this is just, you know, mass incarceration, reincarnate, you know, arresting people of color for low-level drug dealing. And we want to find an alternative social justice, no, non-social justice solution that doesn't involve mass incarceration in, you know, the new cotton fields, because that's the way it's working right now. So I feel like that's going to be a policy recommendation about, you know, and maybe like educating some folks about the adverse impacts in terms of health. For poor folks that have HIV, Hep C, mental health, etc.
So it sounds like what you're doing is transforming the idea of sanctioned encampments into more of what you've been talking about. Yeah.
The sanctioned encampment, I mean, that's just a political stuff and fly, so there's no detailing that to bear breed, you know what I mean?
Of course. So do you want to even call it sanctioned encampment? Do you want to call it something else?
Yeah, that's my question.
Do we take that off this list?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I do feel like it's a...
Okay, yeah.
So then what would you call this instead of... Since we're removing that entirely, what would you call this? More like CBO engagement with homeless encampments or homeless populations rather than whatever that entity is called?
The most likely thing that you could sell the mayor on would be like bringing back the old sort of like TARP drop-in centers, like that were open extended hours, you know.
That falls in with the harm reduction centers.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's where you might get some leverage because, you know, they're like, oh, less people on the streets. That's already a win, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, people who would have been overdosing on the streets are having their overdoses reversed in the safer use bathroom.
Let's monitor every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So these are wins for our mayor.
I guess, I mean, to that point, it's like, I guess back to like the stuff on this side, which include, you know, the lockers thing. Like, because even at navigation centers, there's no lockers right now. But, you know, if we have these drop-in centers, we need to figure out lockers so that people can store medications, et cetera. And then I feel like the clinical capacity to provide mobile services continues to be important because how how do people get medical services in these drop-in centers, et cetera? And I guess one model is that Treat Medicine does it, but Treat Medicine only gets to, like, once a week, you know, I think.
And there's shelter care as well, like kid shit and RP.
Yeah.
I mean, we can work with them.
Yeah, and we're right now, we're talking to Kate more about doing more STD testing in the shelters, and she's really interested on STD, like having an STD clinic like once a week at
The shelters?
Yeah, and like navigation.
There's a pretty extensive primary care presence in shelters. I don't know if you guys know that.
Yeah.
They go to a lot of like 18 or 20 shelters.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
So when looking at the harm reduction centers and looking at the potential that they might have for things like loggers and all that, this is a pretty naive question. Sorry, I haven't followed this as closely as I should. The Prop C money, whatever, is that still tied up legally? Is there anything happening around that? That could connect quite specifically to funding a TARP-like harm reduction center with lockers, with substitute treatment, with all of this stuff.
Another question about locker capacity, because what's the last
time? That was a question. Does anyone know?
So I know that, you know, we've met with Mayor Reed, Lake Life's upper tier. They've had meetings. I feel like that money they were talking at one point of, like, they're still going to spend it anyway. Escrow, cut the legal coverage so that if they suit against it, so there'll still be, you know, people will get the benefit of that.
I see.
Now.
Okay.
And then if it gets.
So it could happen sooner rather than later.
Yes, I think it may.
I had heard nothing, so that's news to me. And I've just heard the news said with regards to legal battles.
Yeah.
So just to. Warren, that's not quite the right word, but just I feel as if I want to make sure that we don't less is better with regards to kind of an effectiveness. I think what we've got there is more than enough to keep Dartmouth busy for a while. So, is there anything else like we're missing? And then if this is kind of where we want to put our energies, what would be the next steps on that? Is that a fair process comment?
Because we
get caught in the wish list.
You brought up money, though, and I guess I just wanted to mention the ending epidemic money.
I was just thinking the same thing. They've given, like, you know, did you listen to
there's something new?
Well, just today, HRSA
did their
talking about it.
Okay.
But they kind of whispered homelessness. I don't think it's because they were against it. I just think we're just further ahead in terms of getting to the next group we need to get to.
Yeah.
But I was actually thinking about whether to mention it here or not. So you guys are familiar. Our president made that thing in the last speech fine he did on the State of the Union. So it's not translating to a huge amount of money, but San Francisco, it's going to roll out over 10 years, but the initial group includes the San Francisco EMA. And there's kind of different areas in care. It seems to me what's new is the bigger push for PrEP. I mean, that seems to me where there's big new energy. I think the other stuff I think we're going to find is not so new. It's not so much money. I think for us it's maybe $1 to $2 million. But so that is something we could look at focusing on homeless. But I was also just thinking it might make sense to kind of call that out as our experience in probably other urban areas as well. So they need to further target it to making sure that money gets earmarked for homeless.
Would they prioritize it though for jurisdictions like?
You know, I think it's so soon in.
Okay.
That, I mean, I think when the money comes down, I think that's something. I mean, we'll go to the planning council and give some guidance on that.
Yeah. But
I think what I kind of keep thinking about is, you know, we have the hardcore homeless and then we have the marginally housed, which are we're still struggling to keep them. You know, by biologically suppressed too. But I hope that my wish is that our view of homeless is more expansive to include unstably housed. I'm concerned that we forget that when we try and hit the hardcore homeless.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think all of these services are really for people who are unstable. Like, they could all serve that overall population. I mean, right now, at Ward 86, it's like estimated that like 40% of the patients
are unstably housed.
So, I think that there's I think maybe as part of this, if we were even able to flesh out a recommendation so that when this money does come through, we'd have an organized
response.
Yeah, an organized like request. You know, I don't know exactly what the
so
process
I think
would
they're
be.
They're talking about like the fund, because the funding has to be approved through the process. So
mm-hmm.
I mean, the president's approving it, the House has a much larger bill, but then they're going to have to fight it out with the Senate. And that's,
mm-hmm.
you know, that the Health and Human Services omnibus is supposed to happen tomorrow. And then, you know, that's, then the Senate will do their thing, and then that whole sausage making will happen. So I think we're actually super early, but I think it's good to articulate a statement and then to link it into as the funding starts to happen. And Health and Human Services bill, and then maybe the epidemic. I think that would be a good statement, even just internally, and that as a group, we want to make sure it gets known to have HIV/AIDS Bureau for them to be thinking about. Because what I'm hearing is that the funding isn't starting to roll out until maybe January of 2020, so there's still time. Yes. But thank you for asking the question, because I was thinking to mention this here. But that could be another thing for this group to think in the long term, or to know it for an action for future when we feel there's opportunities for the public to comment on.
Well, this concept of medical staff in the field, I think, is really kind of, I mean, you can just go outside, walk 2 blocks, and you can see somebody who needs a clinician. So I feel like that need is
right.
Well,
yeah.
It's. I think we put a drop into a bucket.
Yeah. And
so,
I mean, like in Europe, and our reduction teams that do outreach, like we just tend to have like it's like outreach workers. But when you see in Europe that actually it's like a physician, nurses, and then outreach workers. You know, it's like because they get it. It's like, you know, that you've got to bring the care there. And it's not, you know, we're like, you know, we don't want to fund it, you know, we don't fund it enough. It's like, it's just this American stigma, or in poverty, and, you know, you don't deserve services, and, you know, if you can't afford to go to a nice, clean doctor's office, then
I think so, too, though, just acknowledging, you know, the nimbleness of CBOs and the lack of nimbleness of DPH, so just...
It's not because of a great love of DPH, although I worked there and drank the Kool-Aid. I mean, I do think the homeless service center that's going to open is kind of a big statement. I also say, like, if you look, the first clinic that got completely rebuilt was a clinic for the homeless, Tom Bedell,
right.
Urban Health Clinic. So, I mean, just for the fair imbalance, I don't think DPH has done a lot. It's not that there's not a lot more to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting idea, you know. I mean, doctors are so expensive, no place to. But, you know, it's a lot to figure out how to put someone on the street, especially when there's no building mechanism for it. So the thought has been a lot more, let's make a beautiful, welcoming place for people that are homeless. So that, but it's a different direction than what you're proposing. But
yeah,
and then let's have the outreach to bring them
in.
Yeah, no. And then we've also done this thing of, now we're going to be on the street, but we're going to start to provide same-day access, right? So you have to drop in. And ideally, primary care is a system that's supposed to get there. I mean, we're far from that now. But it's a different model than what you're proposing. It's make the place lovely and welcoming and make some of them homeless specific.
Right. But yeah, I mean, like, we got a lovely place, but people still don't come.
Yeah, well, I'm not trying to debate with you. I'm just saying that this is. I just want the group to know that that is what DPH has done, but it hasn't been a lot street based.
Where is that going to be then?
Stevenson and
Indial Salvation Army.
He's down, I think, like Sixth Street, Fifth Street, Fifth and Sixth, I think, on Mission Street. And they're building. It's a whole new. It's embedded in senior housing, senior homeless housing. And they're building a very big clinic, which is all homeless focused.
Nice.
It is going to be like the next clinic that gets built, and it's going to be the most beautiful. So, so at least in that sense, it's some good stuff.
Yeah, I guess. I guess what in terms of like what would success look like? I just think that we often. Because I'm on the DPH side as well. Like, we have these opportunities, whether it's like carry forward or spend down or all the different names for money that's like sitting on the table. We need to figure out what to do quickly. And if we could come up with just like open up like the gates, make it simple, like what could be done, you know, I think it would make possibilities, you know, make it more likely to maybe.
That's hard with money that's left on the table for the end of the year.
Yeah,
what
I know.
We've done is we've said, let's make that available directly to the patient. patients, because actually we can get that at the door, so mm-hmm. you know, stuff like homeless eviction services and you know, that kind of stuff,
yeah.
like rent for people, whatever right. else, or food vouchers or taxi vouchers, that's what we tend to dump it in, because you have
yeah.
to expend it
mm-hmm.
within the contract year.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
We have used it for pilot programs, though.
For stuff that could be done within that period of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if you could do a small study in 3 months. Yeah.
Or we've used it to fund like a sport group.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. You have to, at least that, the group you mentioned, it's not that there are other dollars we can look at, but the stuff that comes fall out of shape, out of contracts, that's just what we did because we couldn't figure out how to write
that. Yeah. I mean, then there's the CHEP side of the house.
Yeah, yeah,
where,
exactly.
So
do you guys,
we usually spend it on stipends or something.
Yeah, you do less of that. Yeah.
Well, we do this prioritization process now.
Right, but I think you guys may have a differential ability to roll over the dollars and not lose them. I mean, we're always scared to leave dollars on the table then what happens is half.
Less money next time. Absolutely.
Oh, no. I'm just saying, I mean, Tarpon's idea of having some kind of product list of, like, recommendation if carried forward available on in whoever's coffer, it could be spent.
Okay.
Like, you know, vouchers or
whatever. The planning council, you guys approve all
every
year.
But we don't necessarily fall into that process. Not that.
Although what Mark is proposing, I mean, if we kind of preset something up with the anticipation
yeah.
of unspent funds, we could do
sure.
a pilot program. Well, no, you said about pilot programs. I'm riffing off of pilot programs.
Yeah.
If you kind of pre-prepared something, if funding would become available, we could roll it out quickly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, part of me like just wonders about this clinical capacity. Like, are there NPs or within DPH where like it could be or on street medicine already?
I don't know
about
street medicine, but
yeah.
But in primary care, it's they're just groaning. I mean, just
okay. No one can hire. Everyone's
yeah.
understaffed.
Yeah.
Okay.
NPs work like 60 hours a week, and they still can't get around to seeing them.
Yeah. And also, you know, the docs don't want to work over 0.7 because they're working 50 hours a week and most of them have young kids. And it's just they're not willing to do it and they can walk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The problem we have is doctor-doctor combinations that are couples, one form or another, don't want to come to San Francisco because they can't afford it either. They're locked out of housing, they don't want to have kids. And so we have a real trouble. Have you guys seen that in STD clinic too?
I mean, yeah, there's a changing workforce, but we're NP run mainly at City Clinic, where yeah,
right.
and most NPs.
But it's a more competitive salary.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Yeah.
So,
I don't need to
yeah.
be dumping, you know, snow on this. I mean, I walk
yeah.
on this. I think that, but I mean, I think that is worth looking at. Yeah.
And then, like, what's the opportunity though to like Ward 86 has one social worker who is willing to go into the field, but like the other social workers don't see that.
We have started some conversations with some partners of them, thanks in part to you. So,
okay.
So let's move along, but it's
okay.
slow. I think when we do the COE, we are kind of structuring in some mobility for those people and some expectation of mobility.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be having a conversation with you about retention of linked patients and some of our stuff.
Yeah.
But that's the next big opportunity I see.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm just wondering, yeah, can we
take the students actually for solely center?
Like increasing, having everyone who's engaged and funded through HHS services feeling like it's part of their responsibility to go out into the field and find patients or like talk to patients if they're not showing up. I just feel like that's a huge mental shift.
It really is. It would be.
It would be. But why not? Like, I just feel like we're the safety net. This is us. There's ACA is covering the people who are eligible, like, are going to Kaiser. You
I
know?
Think the only
and
pushback you'd get is the idea that, yes, that's very important for a certain segment of the population. In some ways, the most obviously severe need population that's in the media now. However, they don't want to necessarily shift a practice if they find it has been reaching communities of color and senior/long-term survivor communities where that model wouldn't work. So I think that would be the only pushback about, like, this idea needs to be embedded across all direct service things. Because someone would say, it doesn't fit. We're seeing seniors who are actually in the home. or yeah. Working in communities of color, or so that's where it wouldn't. But of course, there's seniors in communities of color in this population as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think that argument could be made to push back on that, but that argument would be there.
I mean, I feel like the conversations that I've had with them around that is basically like we can't ask them to do anything else. Like the tipping point is. They're stretched so thin that adding any additional, even the conversation of trying to get them to prescribe PrEP at the COEs, you know, just seemed like too big of a jump, or too big of an ask. So,
if you come up with up against that barrier, the only actual answer then to trying to shift the paradigm would be trying to shift money into it to actually create a new paradigm. And then the problem becomes, well, where does that money come from then? Because you need to you need to also recommend what are you going to eliminate.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, I guess that to that, I mean, is that, I know the summit probably is coming up in the next couple of months, right?
And if you're going to have that kind of a conversation, you should start it before the summit.
I'm not saying that I want to, I'm just saying... Is that,
I'm just saying,
is
like,
that
that's
the kind of conference? I mean, I feel I felt
that's
like
under
the
that's under the planning council's purview to shift funds as it sees fit.
Yeah,
we have done it before. It's just, will people see it as good argument? And you are on the forefront of that epidemic. You should have a good argument. And you have one person here sitting down that trying to listen to every side, and one person goes, the rest of the council goes on your side.
Or if you want to hedge your bets and also look at, like, of course we could shift funds, or you could sort of do what Bill was saying and just try to jump the EOE, whatever that is going to be called, funds that might become available next year.
ETE, yeah.
ETE. And the epidemic, not end of.
Oh, you can do both.
Yeah, I just think the first one is going to be a battle because already, as everyone knows, the services have been cut so trim, and it's going to be a passionate argument back and forth as far as, like, well, which of these services that have already been, the fat has been trimmed from, which of them do we no longer need? Well, not that. Which one is less important than this established new need? So that conversation can happen, but also, and or the conversation around, let's make this a priority, so when and if new money comes in 20, that's where it will automatically go, rather than having that battle. You know, or have both conversations at the same time.
You can actually have...
Talking about shifting funds to address connections out to the fields that are currently landlocked.
With it starting with the idea that you can't really shift a paradigm if there's going to be resistance from CBOs, COEs around, now you need to do this, and the only way to actually shift a paradigm in this overly impacted staffing pattern world is to put more money to it, rather than saying,
right.
You know.
Yeah, the challenge, which is not overcomable if you understand it, is that it's very hard to get any sort of Medi-Cal or Medicare billing rate if you're not in within walls.
Oh, that didn't
so
even occur
no
to me.
Reimbursement. So
there you go.
It means that you're relying completely on Ryan White and completely on the undocumented as their client base to sustain all.
Absolutely.
This.
Didn't even want to think about that. Yeah.
Well, what idiot made that rule? Really, you need walls? How do they know that you're...
It's the end of the day.
But
you know, but Mark, I want to put that out there. It's not that it's not worth exploring, but just that people, there's a reason why I asked them.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think the idea was like looking at if we want to fulfill this idea that more field-based navigation and case management should be a requirement, in particular for certain populations, where does that money come from? Do you look at shifting funds into it? Because you can't just make them do it, or do we do sort of what you were saying and forecast ahead for the potential more money so that when and if that does come, it goes automatically to that because the discussion has been happening.
You have a continuity, but you can
right.
at least try something for 3 or 4 months.
Yep.
I mean, the other thing you can do is do an official request to HRSA to be able to do street-based medicine, ask for an exemption to Medi-Cal billing, just say we're going to stabilize people and then try and do it.
That's exciting.
You can ask them. I mean, they're part of, you know, HAB is part of HRSA, which is where all the FQHC are. It's almost the same thing.
So multiple potentials.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's potential opportunities given that ending the epidemic is like a priority, like all of the,
we're just doing a demonstration project nationally.
Yeah.
We're doing a demonstration project where your insurance carriage, where if you're really truly homeless, hardcore street homeless, that your insurance status is not an impediment to using Ryan White funds to get you stabilized and into care.
I mean, if we could just have that, we would be able to leverage places like City Clinic, for instance, in a way
and
that...
And really go after the hardest problems.
Right now,
so you have to have an active substance use, have an active mental health problem, diagnosis to qualify. I mean, you can make it really retarget the most out and out.
Should we put that on the grid?
Well, it's not necessarily this is what will support these things. It's not it's not separate from that. You see what I mean? Like it becomes how you enact that.
Okay.
You said, I mean, it should be up there, but it's up there already.
I hear what you're saying.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
I didn't actually know that you didn't give me a rust. Like, so, like,
that was
and then get them into, brick and mortar primary care, and then you show how hard that is to do. I think just do that to him.
Alright, I've got to get back to the office for my 4 o'clock meeting.
Thanks for giving us an extra 50.
But I guess back to the next steps.
Yeah.
Does it feel like, I mean, we can talk to Mike when he's back, but does this...
Do we know that the patients are screaming for more locker spaces before we do a ton of energy? Can we ask?
I mean, getting to zero retention re-engagement did surveys with clients.
And so there's some data.
There's
okay.
data.
Okay.
And,
okay.
like, I think it's just about who's the implementer and, like, who takes this and takes it to the next level and figures it out. I mean, I think there was some conversation about Fly being a site. But if you even want to talk about your own challenges, there are just like real logistical challenges,
yeah,
and you need someone who's just gonna like keep addressing each one to make it actually a reality. But I think Sixth Street really feels like they could potentially expand, what they've done.
They have the space?
No, they can't. Yeah, but I mean their lockers are small and they're not always full.
Right. Sometimes
they have.
But that could just be the different way of marketing it.
Yeah, but they're not doing, like, they think if they could scale it up to prep, like, maybe there would be, I just, it goes back to who would take something like this and really figure it out.
Are we wanting it to be HIV specific or a bit larger?
Probably HIV, Hep C.
If it's on this side, it has to be HIV.
Yeah.
You were about to say something. Should we do something?
I don't know.
We're getting action steps.
Yeah.
Try and break some of this down a little bit more.
Yeah. In terms of next steps, I mean, if we were going back to the council, I think would some of these, if we don't have extra money...
This is kind of crazy thinking.
Okay.
I really am inventing this out. Like, if the lockers were a monthly rental fee that could be covered, you could, in the same way, almost treat them like vouchers, and you could stockpile that money and then pay for it. We'd have to double check with the funders, but that could be another way that you actually prepay for a locker space so that could get people through the year, in the same way, like an emergency fund grant. You then put the agency in a slightly unusual way of paying their staff because it has to be reversed by locker by month or whatever it is. We could try it. We could certainly ask our program officer if that would be allowed.
It's thinking out of the box.
It would definitely be, it'd definitely be a different model for our CBOs to be thinking about charging rent for a locker, but it might be a way to make it sustainable and also be able to use money that comes out of contracts and just prepay it. Boom.
Where is Glide with considering Walker?
I mean, I totally want to have it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, it's like, you know, are they going to be on the fifth floor where my program is? Because then that we manage it. If it wasn't on the fifth floor, then it gets complicated.
Exactly.
And we do have this, there's this little area that I could just, a whole wall, could, you know, like Jim Walker type thing, so I could just build, fit lockers all the way across, like that size, and so I could have, you know, 30, 40 lockers. They could start right there, you know.
But the council needs to know the micro details of that? Not really.
Well, if you're going to pay with Ryan White funds, you'd have to restrict it to HIV-positive people. I mean, that would be put up to you the same way we would. I'm imagining that, let's say HRSA says yes to this. You know, we prepaid or used money that fell out of contract, you know, so that they would invoice it, and then they would, you know, they'd have to do the same thing. They have to enter into areas. They'd have to prove they're HIV-positive. If we're using Ryan White funds, if it's other funds,
you'd have to kind of enroll people in your locker program and get those details.
And then you charge like a monthly fee, so there would be a way to, and then, you know, we could pre-purchase and then refer people in so that the money's expended, but
right.
Then you guys have to figure out how to pay for your staff for that,
right.
Which is, it's just a very different model.
Right.
And again, I'm thinking of the box, I don't know if we'll get approved, but it would be one way to look at the money from what DARPA's mentioning, because we definitely have a lot of food vouchers. I mean, those get abused eventually, but if we were to think out of the box, this might be a little bit.
And I just feel like the NAV centers and the shelters are places that really need to go on board.
Yeah, but again, it's like, who's going to work through the logistical pieces with them?
Well, if the planning council wants us to explore it, then it's not hard for us to see the feasibility of using Ryan White. I mean, if the group council has to decide that they want to be HIV specific or they want it to be a different funding, so. They want to look at Ryan White for money specifically that falls out of contract that you know, then spend unallocated. I mean, we call them and they'll say yes, no, or maybe.
I mean, ours are going to be, you know, just medical. You know, it's like you can keep your psych meds in there, or you don't know any meds that you have, but that's it. You know, just medication only lockers. And mostly, I feel like we're, in terms of, you know, my roster of, you know, people with HIV versus people with Hep C, we've always got way more Hep C positives, you know. But of course, they graduate out with treatment every 8 weeks.
Right.
So, and so some of our guys might only be using them for a few months of the treatment, you know. But that's the difference maker in adherence, you know. So, I mean, we're probably just going to buy them and do it ourselves. So, you know, we're not. I put some money from opt-in in for this idea. So.
Yeah.
I'm more thinking about if we were going to try to test the things and how to use money that's kind of more readily available. The downside is it was Ryan White. But, I mean, we have other funding. We have CDC funding. But if you wanted to use a Ryan White that falls out, and it does every year, that would be a way to look at it.
Mm.
Or a combination. I mean, I don't think anyone's set on like it has to be this or that. It's almost like whatever will make it happen.
But I mean, we'd have to be snarly, like every Ryan White dollar has to be for each of us.
Yes.
I mean, we'd have to be snarly that way. I apologize in advance. Like you could be goosey goosey about it.
Right.
Okay. And then some of the inpatient, expanding inpatient or field-based navigators. I mean, that's kind of a big lump, but what was discussed was this addiction medicine team at General. They only have one navigator, and it feels like that's an opportunity to potentially like add so that there's more coverage. And then that person can then have more discussion with Glide or Lynx or whoever, like about the people, they can see more people, they can communicate more. And sometimes we buy ourselves a liaison by helping to support these programs. And
so, you know, the hospital, I have no idea how their budget works or gets allocated.
Yeah.
It's its own mighty fortress.
Yeah. Okay. So
they are. I mean, I think they have the same challenges about hiring additional staff. My guess is it would be definitely strange for partnerships and fiscal intermediaries, but I would think that's probably the only chance there. We need to find some sort of champion in the hospital who's willing to kind of.
I mean, I could ask like Paula Lum and just see, you know, like, because I think she's involved. Right now, that person is grant funded through like, I think a research grant or something like that.
That might be an interesting partnership.
Yeah.
To see if they're willing to help us. And then we could, if you guys want us, we could meet with them, or you could meet with them too. I know really nothing about how But I mean, I think we could talk about what our contracting process is and how we use fiscal intermediaries to provide services. Because they're going to have the same challenge. It's just going to be really hard for them to hire anyone, even if they can find the money.
Right.
So you guys know every position that's approved in DPH, for every position, has to be approved by the mayor. So that's how they control the budget. And we've been told there's no new hiring. So even if we have a $5 million grant or a $10 million grant, we have to handle the same staff or our existing staff.
That's what's going to be challenging, potentially, about VTE.
I think the hospital's going to have the same challenge, unless it's direct patient care generating revenue.
Mm-hmm. Or unless the mayor lifts that restriction.
I mean, that's another thing we could advocate for, is that for us to get to zero and utilize these funds.
And we need additional.
We need to be able to hire positions.
Was it the previous mayor that was it?
This has been a moratorium on new hires for years and years. It's really terrible.
Make it a nice photo op. Yeah. Mayor lists restrictions on hiring new.
But maybe you guys know this hits the bigger thing, because then the community says, why are you have more DPH or city and county positions when you cost more and we produce more and we're more effective, right? So there's that one thing that goes on, right? And then if you try and hire through fiscal intermediaries, which then you have the unions going, hey, you're not giving people union jobs, and you know, you're getting this on the cheap, and you know, that's it. There's lots of politics that goes on with how these funds happen. But I would definitely say DPH is on the leading side of employees at this point. I mean, you see how small HIV health services is. And I would argue we need more staff. We traded it in to keep the services going, but now we're stuck. And there's no way we're getting more staff. And when people retire, we're going to have to fight to keep them. So we may be coming to you asking help for that. So, yeah. Every time you lose a position, you actually have to get approved all the way up to refill your position.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay,
so, yeah,
so in terms
of an action item,
talk to Paula.
We're happy to talk. I'm sure the PhD would be happy to talk about how we can use fiscal intermediary as the pluses and minuses, and I don't know what the hospital is doing.
Mm-hmm. The request around clinician time to support local testing and CBO work, and it almost feels like ideally you would have someone from the street medicine team.
Yeah.
Because again, like makes more sense to keep centralizing.
Or the existing structure.
STD clinic. But they're so understaffed. They have like 14 vacant positions or something. It's not a money thing right now. It's a hiring thing.
Well, they actually were one exception of actually getting some more staff around opioid, particularly treatment stuff.
My idea, working in partnership, it means that also we've got more, we've got more opportunities to reconnect. If we've got patients in common, then we have a better chance of scooping them back up when they kind of get moved from here to there. You were seen dead. I can take you dead and jump in the van, So, I like the idea of, I just know that they don't have the capacity.
It's a capacity issue there.
But I'd be totally happy to have, an embedded street medicine nurse practitioner or a nurse even that is, clinically supervised, so she can, they're prescribing and she's just distributing, right? Mm-hmm.
It might be attractive to street medicine to leverage your staff initially, and then you guys develop a relationship, and then you do the ask after you've done it for a bit. Develop some, some measures, which DPH can probably do, or street medicine actually. Street medicine can do.
They meet every week with the head of HR. I was talking to them about this one position because I was like, you need to fill this because this grant money is just like...
We meet monthly. How often are you guys meeting?
We don't meet. No one from HR is willing to meet with us regularly.
Okay.
But Jeff Sinbe from Street Medicine meets...
Oh, Jeff Sinbe.
Weekly.
He's got a special.
With Kim Walden. So it's definitely... They're able to
move stuff.
But not fast.
And is this from the opioid money to do the MAT?
Yeah, Barry's been paying for everything.
Exactly.
But that's moving quicker than anything else.
It feels like we came up some concepts and action. I don't exactly know what future, you know, what.
But I think it's great. This group should be empowered too. But I think it's kind of helpful for you guys, but it's helpful for us to think about what we might do internally.
Yeah.
So, well, as far as next steps go, will you be talking to people prior to next month's meeting?
I can talk to Paula.
So you can do that. I'm happy to join for the second round of conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more just asking, like, how's, because they just started the addiction medicine navigator thing in January, so I think it's like, how's the first few months going? Like, are they swamped? Are they not?
Plan growth, are you looking for partnerships with the community and the hospital triad? Are you looking for ways to fund more positions?
And will you be doing anything around the lockers? That locker idea you came up with?
If you guys want me to, I'll list out anything.
It seemed exciting to these.
Yeah, I mean, the worst I can say is no, and my guess he'll say write something up. At least to float it as a concept. Yeah.
So then for next steps and next month's meeting, we'll have report backs from both of you on that.
Yeah, unfortunately, we meet with him the day after the planning council meets. So that will be before this. So yes.
And then what we'll do on the agenda is we'll actually have this, we'll all put together this mapped out this way in these two different areas. And because it'll be good to have Mike D's thoughts on this as well. He might be able to bring even more to the table.
Maybe I'll see if we can track down a description that's already existing with the 6th Street. I'll track something down and pull it into our program.
I mean, Mike would have that probably.
Yeah, say last
mile. Yeah, like the lockers. Yeah, we, as part of Optum, we did do some due diligence around, learning more about the lockers.
So let's talk more about what
lockers.
You have, but I can flood him with some information so I can
be serious. Is it possible to ask if this meeting could be shortened to 1 hour next time?
I see no problem with that at all. Do you see a problem with that, Melina?
I don't know.
Would you prefer? You can just direct your support staff to enact that. Would you prefer 3 to 4 or 4 to 5?
3 to 4. No. I'm flex. I'm really blocked.
3 to 4.
Okay.
Lovely.
I would go for 4 to 5.
Yeah, 4.
And just our day, my day gets so cut.
Can you do 4 to 5, Paul?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could since we're here. Okay. All right. Anything else that you guys want to talk about? I don't mean to chair the meeting.
I mean,
sorry, Paul.
I guess one thing I'll just mention is that Epic is coming, and I've been looking into like what are the housing questions being asked as part of Epic, and I've been wondering about what are the other alignments in Aries.
Beth, we're doing a ton of stuff on that because the whole city, you derive your FQHC status based on certain populations, and it's homeless and marginally housed.
Yeah.
So I know there's a ton of work going into that, and Beth is probably a good person.
Like, is that an Aries? Is that something in Aries?
Aries does have a different number of statuses. It's not as richly complex and doesn't match what the feds require.
Okay. So we wouldn't want to align, because sometimes it's good to have alignment across.
Want to align. The problem with Aries is it's multi-state.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure it's worth the amount of work to make that equal, because we can just pull the data separately. We can find out who's HIV positive and the FQHC system and just pull all that data and deaggregate it so people's names don't come out. Like, I don't think we have to. I mean, great that areas do that. I just don't think it's worth the work.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.